We are live here inside the Suburban Chevrolet Make the Choice Studios. Wow. These are my guys. I'm glad to have them in studio every single week. You know, they're kind of like, but you know, Ira and I are kind of like your therapy. They kind of serve as my therapy from time to time. I'm talking about sitting across from me. You ever been called a therapist before, Brian Cook?
A therapist?
Yeah.
Definitely right. Not.
Is talking to you a cathartic experience for people? Have they told you that before?
No.
They haven't?
That's a first.
Not for me.
Well, Craig Ross, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay.
We know Brian from MGO Blog. We know you from?
Ann Arbor Observer.
He's a local raconteur.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good. Ann Arbor Observer, shout out to John Hilton over there. And I've written a couple of books, Obscene Diaries of a Michigan Fan and The Search for the Unified Field Theory Football Version. Very obscure gonzo stuff, but there it is.
All right, so you guys watch a lot of football, analyze a lot of football. Spring game go.
Maurice Hurst, that was my big takeaway. I liked how they played him at three different spots. They played him at the nose. They played him at the three tech. They even played him a little bit at end. He got a sack off Logan Tooley-Tillman once when doing that. And he beat Glasgow a couple times, which I think is one of the most impressive things you can do in this spring game, is to go 1-on-1 with Glasgow and win that battle. I think that he's going to see a lot of playing time, especially on passing downs, because you look at these ends, and you're not seeing a ton of pass rush. So what are you doing to get to the quarterback? I think you might see a lot of like Henry and Hurst packages on nickel situations. Mm-hmm. So he was the guy who really leapt out to me as like, this guy is really taking a step forward.
Yeah, I liked Hurst too. I talked about him during the game. They got to put him on the field to see if it translates, because he was impressive last spring, not as impressive as he was this spring. But man, like you, I mean, every time I looked up, the guy was in the backfield. You know, if he wasn't making the play, he was, you know, allowing someone else to. So
I thought Hurst made plays last spring. In fact, this time last year, I mentioned Hurst saying that guy can make plays. And then we didn't see a whole lot of him during the season. You know, the thing that I came away with, and when I wandered away from the stadium, I was fairly downcast. But I watched the tape, and I thought the quarterback play wasn't nearly as bad as I thought when I was watching it live.
Okay.
I thought both quarterbacks showed me something. I know this may be hard to believe for watching it casually, but when I went back and watched the film, I mean, what we had were receivers not getting open, receivers dropping balls, you know, no running game to speak of, and some sketchiness in the pass blocking, although I thought the pass blocking was a little bit better than the run blocking, which may be faint praise. But so I thought the quarterback play actually was hopeful. What I wasn't hopeful about, or what I felt really badly about, was that just the running, you know, the run game was...
Well, I mean, Michigan's playing the 8-man front for most of the spring game because they have this new defense where their safeties are very, very different.
Yeah.
So last year, the free and strong safeties were pretty interchangeable. This year, you know who the strong safety is. It's Jabril Peppers, and he's going to line up at or near the line of scrimmage almost all the time. So that's already kind of a tough situation to run the ball in, and then you've got, you know, instead of your offensive line, you've got that split across two teams.
I mean, that's the upside, of course. That's the hope, is that you're splitting the offensive line anyway, and it's already a place we may not be that great.
And you don't have Ty Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
One of the teams is running Wyatt Shulman, and that's, you know, he's an H-back. You know, he's not a tailback.
Right.
So, you know, you've just got a lot of carries that are kind of starting from behind the eight ball to start. And then Michigan has great depth in their front seven. Like, you've got Ben Gedeon, who's not a starter. You've got those four defensive tackles. Like, I think Michigan's too deep at defensive tackle is just terrific. And then you've got a number of defensive ends on the strong side that give you depth there. The weak side end, there wasn't much depth at all. But, you know, in terms of a spring game, I think that was certainly – personnel-wise, an advantage for the defense.
And certainly we knew coming in and after that the defenses tend to be ahead of offenses in the spring. That's almost always true. And this is should be a pretty good defense,
it
right?
It should be, yeah.
I mean, a lot of the problems are the little gaps we've had in the defense in the past. I don't see them. I mean, maybe you've got a little bit of problem at defensive end, maybe, but not.
I mean, if you get some guys healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, now that you've got Chris Wormley playing strong side, or weeks at it, they don't seem to be making much of a distinction.
Right.
But Wormley out there, they moved a couple of the defensive tackles out there as well. You've got
Marshall looks like he might be a pass rusher to me. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you go back and you're like, you watch the game live and you're like, oh, what an awesome sack by Lawrence Marshall. And then you go back and you look at it again and it's like, oh, they just didn't block him on that one.
Yeah.
They decided not to do that. So it's like,
yeah,
a little bit.
I tweeted them about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, it still counts as a sack.
It still counts.
God,
and he did look good. But the thing that I was very impressed with Hirsch is that he was beating people. He wasn't beating the beneficiary of some missed assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of leaps out to you when you're consistently winning those one-on-one battles.
So with regard to the offensive line guys, when you went back and looked at it, you know, I told people it was going to be hard to make unit assessments because they weren't, I mean, the first string wasn't together. They were pretty hodgepodge and mixed up. But, I mean, what, if anything, did you take away from watching individuals? Were there any offensive linemen that you were particularly impressed with or not impressed with Saturday?
Well, I don't want to necessarily single guys out who I didn't even think were going to be ready yet, but Logan Tuli-Tillman got the nod at left tackle on one of the teams and took three penalties. I think got beat a couple times in pass protection. Didn't look ready. And we've heard a lot about him, you know, maybe making that step forward. And this was kind of the earliest he was going to be viable, I think, redshirt sophomore. And he's still got a summer and a fall camp to prove that he could be viable. But I kind of – what I took from that is that I think your starting tackles are probably Cole and either Magnuson or Braden. Like, I think the five that you're going to see out there are going to be Cole, Braden, Glasgow, Kalis, and Magnuson. And the question, I think, is whether, you know, Magnuson's going to be the guard or the right tackle. And I think that depends more on Braden than anything else. Because Magnuson can probably play both. And Braden, ideally, he's a right tackle.
Right.
Like, and the fact that they keep trying him at guard kind of speaks to some of the issues he had last year. And, I mean, my hope is that he gets those figured out, because if he's at guard, that's not an ideal physical fit for him. And it kind of, I think, puts a limit on how good we think this offensive line is going to be.
Craig?
Yeah, I thought I was looking at Kugler a lot, and I was hoping I'd see some strides from him, because then maybe you can move Glasgow out to the left guard spot. He did make plays at times, but he was inconsistent and blew plays at times. You saw the first play of the game, the very first play was power, and you saw Kugler and Bars get a really, really nice blocks at the
on Willie Henry.
Yeah, at the point of attack, and it allowed Kalis to on the backside to swing into the front side gap, and then you had a 35-yard run. Now, the truth is that I think Royce Jenkins-Stone played the wrong gap on that, or he and Gedeon played the same gap. I'm not quite sure, but doesn't matter. The point is that when the backside guard can swing out and run free, then the play has some vitality. But later on in the game, that when they tried to run that, I think once maybe they had some success. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, well, and this is with this format, it's difficult to run the ball because, you know, on defense, one guy has to make a play, and then you blow up the run.
Right.
On offense, if anybody misses anything, you've blown the play up. So when you stretch it thin, it's always to the advantage of the defense. And so usually you see these spring games, and it's like, oh, it was a low-scoring spring game. It was 17-10. And this took that to another level, but you know, a lot of the issues they had were understandable, and coming from where they were the last 2 years on offense, I wasn't that surprised, you know.
What did you think of quarterback play? I mean, were you as down as most of the commentators?
Well, I thought Malzone did not look anywhere near ready.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the kind of guy who has to be that robotically efficient, like Brady Breeze type.
See, I thought he started out that way, though. To start, you know, in the first quarter.
Maybe it was, you know, that 2-minute drill at the end where he's just throwing 5-yard hitches is like, I mean, you got to at least try to go downfield a little bit more. I thought, you know, he is going to need a year or two so he has total command of the offense and can go through his reads, bang, 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 bang. Because he's the kind of guy who has to know what he's doing before the snap to really excel. Mm. And I think that he's not at that point yet. Morris, I do think that he looked better on tape because he had some balls that were dropped. The interception that zinged off Dukes' helmet, you know, that throw was about 12 yards downfield. And it was humming, but at that point, I kind of expect the receiver to be able to adjust to that. Like, if you're talking about like a 5-yard drag or something, that's something that you need to take a little bit off. But that was a ball in a small window that was past the first down marker, and I'm just like,
I thought it was a good throw.
Yeah, you got to catch that. Yeah. And then he's got that sideline throw that they kept throwing to Darbo down pat. Like, they threw that 4, 5, 6 times. Every time it was on the money. And if you've got that throw, I mean, that's the kind of throw that there's a reason that Ryan Mallett is in the NFL, and that's that throw. Because if you can put it on the sideline, 2 yards inside the hash, 20 yards downfield, that's really tough for a lot of defenses to handle.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to kind of get a grasp for is, you know, Alex, the secondary he had to face was certainly superior in that contest to the one that Shane had to face. Now, to his credit, he found a matchup and they exploited the heck out of it.
I mean, the thing about that Norfleet Darbo matchup is that those throws were so good. I don't know if many other quarterbacks are going to be able to do much with that.
That's a really good point, because I didn't think Norfleet's coverage was really that bad. I mean, he was just too small.
Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't great, but he was, you know, you see coverage like that. And I thought the throws were better than the coverage was bad on those.
Yeah, and then the Duke's touchdown, it's like, man, that's not fair. It's just not fair. But what I saw from Shane, I thought he started out really rough. I thought that you had some, the touch passes weren't there. And then it was kind of the opposite, where, you know, Alex started out, I thought, pretty solid and got worse. Shane started out rough, and I thought he got better as the day went on.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for that. Overall, though, I think that Morris showed that he's ahead right now, and that was...
That's what Harbaugh said.
Harbaugh said after... I mean, I think everybody watching that was like, all right, he's number one right now. But with Rudock coming in, I think he's my presumed starter until we see otherwise, because he's been starting in the Big Ten for 2 years. He was actually the third most efficient passer in the league last year, which is sort of a ringing condemnation of Big Ten offenses, but it's also a fact. Like, he was, I mean, Gardner was ninth, he was third. So he's only behind Cook and Barrett, which is kind of shocking, but he did complete like 60% of his passes for 7.6 yards an attempt, only threw 3 interceptions in league play. So this is a guy who's not just a quarterback, he's a pretty decent Big Ten quarterback.
Well, here's the thing. You got to have someone to throw it to. Now, there are guys with physical talent, but the physical talent, you weren't able to enjoy it as much because they didn't hold on to the football on Saturday.
Well, I mean, other than the one drop that Darbo had early, I think he established himself as Michigan's number one receiver. The matchup there was kind of odd. Like, you've got all these defensive backs who look like really good defensive backs, and your number one receiver is matched up against Norfleet, who's barely even a converted. He's just a running back or a wide receiver playing quarterback. And I would love to see him go up against Jordan Lewis, but, you know, that wasn't going to happen. So I think that Darbo will be a fine number one. You're going to wish he was number two. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to wish you had, like, a superstar on the team. But as in a guy who you target a lot, I think he's going to be fine. And then you have Jake Butt. So, like, Jake Butt is going to be a great tight end option, I think. And so I think the wide receivers didn't do well, but it wasn't a situation where it was conducive to them playing lights out. And they're going to have to find a guy or two in here. And maybe...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still optimistic about Freddie Canteen.
Canteen had a couple nice catches.
And off of what I saw last year in practices, I really felt like he can become a good wide receiver. Now, the other person that I'm feeling might do something. I mean, I don't know what you think of Chesson still, and whether, I mean, he's a good blocker. I'm Brian Cole. I think may become a good receiver, but his blocking looked a little shaky to me in the game, to say the least.
Up. He got blown up by Blake Howard.
He did. I liked that out of Blake. I hadn't seen that before. Like, Cole popped up, and he's like, what just happened to me?
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, I don't know what happened to you. But Countess actually looked aggressive. I thought he looked much improved from last year, especially in man coverage. And, you know, last year we thought Canteen was the star of the spring because he was getting over the top on Countess. Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be more of an omen about Countess than Canteen.
Right.
This year, Countess looked so much better. I don't know if it's that he's got, like, two, like, super legit longtime NFL secondary coaches now. And he did not have that last year. But I thought he looked improved. And he's going to have to be improved because you know Lewis is going to start and you've got Lyons coming in. So I think he's answering the bell in terms of, like, I'm going to fight for my job. But that's not actually what we're talking about. We're talking about the wide receivers.
Yeah. I'm sort of thinking about Canteen the way I felt about Willie Hurst last year. I thought Willie Hurst last year.
Mo Hurst.
Last year was ready to break out, and it never quite happened. Yeah. And I think that maybe this year will be the year for Hurst and Canteen.
Well,
and at least that's my hope.
I mean, the other guy who could break out is the actual Willie Henry.
Yeah.
So in this game, he ragdolls Cole. And when he does that, it is just unbelievable to watch, where he's on the wrong side of the block and he's just
toss
almost literally picks the guy up and moves him to the other side.
Yeah,
I saw that. Like, if he can put it together, that is an All-American. There are a few people in college football as strong as Willie Henry. And, you know, he's got a couple more years. I was hoping it was going to happen last year. I'm still hoping it's going to happen this year, where he just turns into this just all-consuming force.
I saw that play you're talking about. He tossed it to the side. It's like, man, that's impressive.
Yeah.
How can you do it consistently?
I mean, he does that so regularly in Big Ten play, but the reason he has to do that is because he's gotten himself in a bad position. So, like, not getting in that position more often would help, I think. And but, man, he's got all kinds of potential. And if he can just unlock it,
my big fear about the coming season, aside from the fact that I think we play a really good Utah team in the first game, or a very good Utah team, is I just don't know if we're going to run the ball, and I don't think we're going to have a superstar passing game. It's not like we're going to go spread the pass or anything like that, and the running game seems a complete enigma to me at this point.
And that's
scary to me.
You know, they went to like an all or mostly inside zone game last year, and if they're going to change back to more of a power approach, there's going to be a transition cost there. But they did run the ball okay last year, and especially if they can find a running back who will hit the holes that are there, I think that that'll be a big help. And so, you know, you've got Isaac. If Drake Johnson gets back, like, you're going to have more options there. And I thought Devian Smith looked pretty good.
Yeah, he's by all accounts he has. It's not just that other guys were out. He's performed well this spring. He has been more assertive with the football. I mean, lot less tentative. I mean, that's what the thing that stuck out to me at the end of last season. He was tiptoeing. Like, this is not a tiptoe guy. And so none of that was present this spring, and really impressed his coaches and players and other observers at practice. And it's going to make, as those other guys come back, make that competition all the more intense. But when we come back on the other side, we'll get to your phone calls. Don, Eric, Zeke, you guys are up first. And, you know, interesting to me, we went through that entire discussion. I know the focus was on offense, but we talked a little defense as well. Some names, you mentioned Mo Hurst, you mentioned Willie Henry and Blake Countess. We didn't mention Joe Bolden.
That's a good
And while he was the top player in the game, I thought, performance-wise, I think there's a reason for that. We'll get into that on the other side in your phone calls as well here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the official voice. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. We're live here inside the Suburban Chevrolet Make the Choice Studios. So I was talking to the guys in the break about Joe Bolden and said, hey, you know, he was a Jake Ryan-like factor on the field on Saturday. He was all over the place. Obviously, Jake Ryan wasn't that guy at middle linebacker, but he was just that guy that if you needed a play made, he was the one making it. Speaking of Jake Ryan, he's coming to the MDN right here on campus. Mark your calendars to see former Michigan linebacker Jake Ryan at the MDN on State Street on Saturday, April 18th from noon until 2 p.m. The first 300 fans in line are guaranteed an autograph from number 47, Jake Ryan, as he prepares to enter the National Football League. The MDN is located at 303 South State Street right here in Ann Arbor. The MDN and the Victor's Collection, the official outfitters of Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. See you with Jake Ryan on Saturday, April 18th. So, guys, what do you think? Are we going to see Joe be able to take that practice performance that he turned in last spring? But, you know, he was solid in the fall, but he wasn't that guy that he was in the spring and in fall camp. Are we going to see that be different this year? And him be able to take that to the game field this year?
I feel like I'm stealing your thunder from the break here, because you had a partake that I thought was right on. That Bolden really knows what is going on with Michigan's offense, so he can be extraordinarily instinctive when he's playing against them. And then in the fall, I mean, we've all seen him kind of have that hesitancy that you can't have, because if you're hesitant, then you get hit instead of hitting somebody. And there are a couple of plays where I remember, you know, he's got a free hit on third and two, and it turns into a first down because he's not confident in his read. And when he is confident, you see the kind of performance like he had on Saturday, and it's lights out. And I mean, I can't tell you that if it'll translate or not, but he's a senior now. He's got a ton of experience. I think that it's either now or never, which is obvious. But
yeah. I mean, plainly, I don't know. I know that Mark Smith a year ago, the ex-linebacker coach, told me that Bolden in practices was just, you know, as good as anybody he'd ever, you know, seen or had, and that he was just, terrific as a practice player. Now, it hasn't quite translated to the field. I mean, one of the things we talked about in the break was whether Michigan really will be a 4-2-5 team. I mean, whether they'll just go with two inside linebackers
Jabril Peppers
as whatever you call him, sort of a
hybrid space player,
whatever he
wants. That loves to stick his nose in. Yeah. That's the thing.
And if so, then you've got four guys, I guess, on the interior, right? Maybe five if you count.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got Ross, I mean, Ross has played inside linebacker in the past and can in the future. Yeah,
DJ Durkin really seems to like Ross.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting because you look at the way Michigan played defense this spring, and it's like, you know, whenever there's three wide receivers on the field, they're going to be in a nickel. Mm-hmm. I think that's a guarantee. You're never going to see Jake Ryan walk over the slot anymore. Not that Jake Ryan's around,
right,
but his equivalent. You're going to see three defensive backs and two safeties, and it's going to be a 4-2-5. And how often they do that in base personnel is going to be interesting because, you know, Peppers was sticking people in the backfield. He's one of those guys who can take on a tight end, I think, and win that battle. So what the spread does is put you in a lot of one-on-one matchups that are uncomfortable matchups. So safety on a slot receiver or, you know, a tight end on a cornerback, that kind of thing. And Peppers is the kind of guy who wins so many of those matchups that it takes away a lot of the advantages the spread would give you. And then you're just left with, you know, some of the safety screwing stuff that it does.
Right. Let's go to the phone, 734-998-1050. Don in Ann Arbor, who's been waiting patiently. Don, good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. I guess I have never in my 40-plus years of paying attention to Michigan football really put much stock into spring practice for the reasons you're going against each other with split squads. You don't have your first guys all on the same line. And this season or this spring practice was no different. I guess I don't understand the pessimism of some people with regard to the offense. I did not think that there was any way that after 15 practices that we were going to see the offense at anything close to what it eventually will be. And I don't think our offense is really going to round into form until past the halfway point of the upcoming season. I think our defense is going to have to carry us in the first part of the season. I think we've got the potential to have a really solid, if not strong, defense, but I'm expecting the offense to sputter sporadically throughout the first part of the season, and that we won't really see the running game round into Harbaugh-like form until later in the season, which means that I think predictions of 8-4 are far more realistic than the typical 12-0, 11-1, rosy stuff, irrational exuberance that MGoBloggers seem to predict so confidently.
Brian, I don't think you're predicting 12-0.
No, I think he's talking about
the message board guys.
How about similarities to MSU a couple years ago? They came in with a really good defense. They had Maxwell, a quarterback, and eventually went to Cook.
You know, I was actually going to bring that up. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be the kind of team they have to be, where, you know, they have a guy who manages the game on offense, gets you some points, and then you have to make your defense have that stand up. And I think Rudock is actually a really good fit for that, because he's a guy who's, you know, conservative with the ball, doesn't turn the ball over much, and still manages to get a decent yards per attempt. So he's the kind of guy who could make this work. And that's one reason that I'm a little bit, I'm more certain that Rudock would start than Morris, because Morris, we've seen, has a lot of potential, but also kind of has a tendency to just throw the ball right at defenders. And I think that would be extremely bad for this team specifically, because of the offensive issues they have and how good I think their defense could be if they consistently punt the ball.
Right. Well, you know, Don's comments are completely reasonable, and so are Brian's. But I still worry with Rudock. You know, I agree that Rudock is probably more likely than not the way we're going to see the season start. I think Morris might have a little more upside than Rudock, but I think Rudock will be probably safer, a better game manager, fewer INTs than we might see from Morris. But the problem for me still comes back to, can we run the ball? And you still need to run the ball some, even if your defense is very, very good.
I think you're taking a little bit too much away from a disjointed spring game. I mean, they were
maybe.
They weren't great last year, but they did manage to run the ball
some at the end of the year.
And, you know, that, I mean, they get back everybody from that offensive line except Miller. They get back all their tight ends. They get back all their running backs. They're going to have Drake Johnson back. You know, they should progress, especially if you believe that the coaching has improved.
Right. And you're not going to have a walk-on next to a third-string guy with a starter in the middle of him because you split the offensive lines in half. There's enough talent for one offensive line. There's just not enough ready talent for two.
I hope this is all true. I'm just skeptical.
I mean, I don't think you can. It's a point of data, right? But there's also the point of data that Harbaugh did what he did at Stanford and did what he did in San Francisco. I mean, this is a man who knows how to coach a run game.
True enough.
We're going to go there, and how fast we go there is really the question. And I agree that it doesn't seem likely that we're going to be lights out this year, but I think they'll be good enough to move the ball.
734-998-1050. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Eric in South Carolina. Eric, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Sam. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
Good morning, Eric.
Hey, Craig Ralph, I think you were sleepy last week because I know you got time difference in Hawaii, but on the Black Nostradamus, I know Michigan don't play Notre Dame this upcoming year. And American Sniper was a great movie, man. I loved it. I watched it about 3 times already. But what I was calling is what I was calling about was the thing that I took away from this spring game. Which I called in a couple of years ago, Sam, and I said the one thing, the biggest problem I have with our DBs is our DBs do not mirror the receiver, they do not track the ball, they do not play the ball in the air properly. And I said I thought that was coaching, and that was the one thing I took away from this spring game. You watch the play of the DBs, they track the ball, they mirrored the receiver, they ran with the receiver, when the receiver turned for the ball, they turned for the ball. Played the ball in the air. I thought that was beautiful, and I attribute that to coaching, because the same player just making plays that they wouldn't have made two years ago, even a year ago, they wouldn't have made those plays. Sure, they grew up over the year, But I attribute that to the coach, the coaches of the DBs, man. I think them having NFL coaches at the DB spot is helping these guys tremendously. And I love to see what I saw from them guys playing that ball while I was in the air. That play the Watson made, that's coaching. That's coaching. He couldn't have made that play a year ago. So I that's what I love. That's what I took from the spring game that I loved the most out of everything that I saw. Teams gonna have a hard time passing on this team.
Yeah,
hey, y'all have a good one, fellas.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. You know, I think that's a really good point. Watson made a great play with the ball in the air. I thought he looked good overall.
He did.
Yeah, I thought so too.
It was weird last year because they started playing him at safety, and I'm like, dude, have you seen his high school film? It is literally all man press coverage. Mm-hmm. That's all he did. And if you don't think that he can do that on the college level, then you probably shouldn't have recruited him.
Yeah, he's a super physical guy, too. Yeah. Very, very physical. But, you know, you question his ability to run with guys at that level. But he clearly can do that. And his ball skills, I mean, he took the ball away from Oways.
He did.
Basically what it boiled down to.
The,
so
the when you look at the defense, what questions do you have? I mean, I have
pass
one.
Pass rush.
All right, that's the same for me. I mean, that when I look at it, I say, you know, the secondary looks pretty good.
You know,
they look pretty good against the run. I mean, I wonder about
I feel like they're going to be able to get – I know there's no known quantity like Frank Clark, and even Frank Clark only came on really at the end of last season. But I figure there's so many options between – you know, between Ojemudia, I like how far it seems like Wormley has come. Ojemudia, we didn't see any Taco Charlton out there. He showed some flashes last year. We're seeing some Mohurst. One of those guys, man, you know, or a combination of those guys, got to be able to get some pressure from somewhere in there. I think that's, you mentioned earlier today, the number of options. Now, it's not a sure thing,
yeah.
But I feel better about them finding someone in there to be a consistent a source of pass rush. I feel more confident in that than I do that they're going to have an impact player in the middle of their defense, a middle linebacker.
Really?
Right now, I'm talking about a guy that, you know, game in and game out on that third and two play is going to make that play.
Really? Because I'm the biggest, like, I'm going to use a sports talk radio term right now. I'm the biggest Desmond Morgan slap in the universe, I think.
Okay.
I think he's terrific. He doesn't have the athleticism that makes everybody go nuts, but great on pass drops, and when it hits people, they stop. I think that Morgan, as a senior, a redshirt senior in this defense, which is a lot like the last defense, I think he's going to be lights out. I think he's going to be – he's not going to be David Harris, but he's not going to be that far away from David Harris.
Wow, okay, well, if that happens, man.
I'm with you on this. I mean, plus I think there's so much competition in the middle. You got Morgan, you got Bolden, you got Ross, you know, in there. You got Ben Gideon.
And see, that's what may happen.
You're going to have a couple of linebackers.
That's what may happen. See, now, we didn't see Ross the last couple of weeks of the spring. He was out with injury. But in the first few weeks of the spring, he really impressed DJ Durkin enough to say, hey, dude, you're going to play kind of deal.
Yeah.
But Gideon, you know, I think Gideon is physically – probably the most talented of those guys. Now, can he push them to the point of sitting someone down? Either he sits them down or they get better. That to me is a big, big key to the linebacker play this year.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if Bolden doesn't translate that, or I'm just wrong about Morgan, you're going to see someone step in.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel more confident that you're going to get excellent linebacker play than that Michigan's going to be able to hit the quarterback consistently. I mean, I agree with you that I don't think it's a dire situation. Mm-hmm. I just think that in terms of, like, what are the ways in which this defense isn't really, really good, I think that's number one, is, like, they can't get to the quarterback consistently.
734-998-1050. Let's talk to Zeke in Atlanta. Zeke, how's it going down there in the Peach State?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's going to be about 80 degrees today. Blue in the sky.
Same as so here. Just like here.
So that means great weather for the Masters. That's all that matters.
Great conversation this morning, by the way. I'll be quick. Two quick points. My first point is that I believe that Brian Cole is going to be our guy in terms of his skill set. I think he's right now our best receiver in terms of run after catch. Even with Freddie, you know, he goes down at first contact. And I think if Jake is our starting quarterback, bubble screens, checkdowns. I think he's going to work in that 10-yard intermediate area, and he's a big enough kid to where he can catch and run after catch. And I really feel like he's quick enough, you know, to get open in those areas where Jake will be looking to throw the ball. So I really think he'll end up being, my bold prediction is he'll be our leading receiver in terms of catches next year, and Amaro will be our leading deep threat. But then my other concern is that we truly don't have a guy that can stretch the field, i.e. like a Devin Smith type guy, to where, you know, when we have defenses starting to crowd, you know, our run game and really get on our tight ends, that we have somebody that can truly go up top, that somebody's going to be concerned about and have to double team. So I like everything else about the team. I think the pass rush will be good. I'm a little bit concerned, like Sam, about the middle linebacker in terms of just consistency and Desmond being, you know, healthy enough with that shoulder to you know, week in, week out, stop those third and twos. But right now, my biggest concern would be stretching the field and going deep. Thanks, guys, and go Blue.
Thanks, Z.
Well, there's more than one way to go deep. So there's the Manningham way to go deep, and then there's the Junior Hemingway way to go deep. And I think they have a couple candidates on the team to be Junior Hemingway types. And Darbo is obviously the number one. So, I mean, he's a big, rangy guy who can leap and has a talent for finding the ball in those awkward spots when it's over your shoulder. So the number one guy who never managed to do that at Michigan was Daryl Stoneham. Had all the physical talent in the world but couldn't high point that ball. And Junior Hemingway was, I think, maybe the best I've seen at Michigan other than Braylon. I was like, that's wrong. but you know, the Braylon type, and Braylon was fast enough to get deep too, but the Hemingway type where, you know, you put him against a cornerback who's a few inches shorter than him, and that's not a fair matchup if you just punt the ball up.
In his own way, Jake Buck can stretch the field too.
You know, if you can't put a linebacker on him, right, and he goes down that seam,
right,
you know, that's a tough thing. So especially with Harbaugh, because you know Harbaugh likes to send those tight ends deep.
734-998-1050. Dave in the car. Dave, what's up?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Great show. I got a couple of questions for Craig Ross, but before, I'm just curious, why Taco Charlton wasn't out there Saturday?
He's hurt, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been battling injuries this spring. Or he did battle injuries this spring.
But, oh, yeah, okay. I expect he'll definitely be in the mix this fall, so yeah, there's no question.
All right, my question for Craig, I guess a two-part question. I remember reading in one of your books that...
Someone read one of those things?
And I forget which one it was, but if I got it right, you said in there that the most important predictive statistic in college football is yards per pass attempt. And if I got that right,
that's correct.
If you could amplify that a little bit, and then two, if you still believe that, why you're not a little bit more hopeful about the Michigan offense, given that Ruddock's record is so good in that regard? I'll hang up and let you.
Great questions. You know, no one has ever asked me about that, even though I've written about it quite a bit. And it goes back to a time when I was trying to look at various statistics and see if there was something that correlated to winning and losing games. And I saw a throwaway in a book that was written, I can't remember who wrote it, in the 60s about yards per pass attempt. And then Paul Zimmerman had a throwaway in Sports Illustrated about yards per pass attempt. So I started looking at it, and it did correlate with winning and losing games to a very high degree. Partly why I think this is because yards per pass attempt also connects, I believe, to the run game. In ways that aren't particularly, well, that maybe obvious.
Michigan didn't pass much under Rodriguez, mm-hmm, but when they did, they tended to get lots of yards per attempt.
Right. And so am I still a believer in yards per pass attempt? Yes. Do I think it's the best stat for measuring how good a team is? Yes. And I think I've done this in the past, you can order teams top to bottom by yards per pass attempt, and it'll bank right with their ultimate records in that year.
I should point out that Ruddock 7.6 is not great. It's average. So
it's little above average, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit above average, but it's not outstanding. So it usually ranges from 5, which, think 2008 Michigan, that's 5.
Actually, we're 3.98 one year.
Were we?
We were 3.98, the worst ever seen in the universe.
Does that include sacks? Because I think they were at 5.2 if you don't include sacks in 2008.
Battle of the stats. I'll have to check that. Part of the problem is, of course, college football lumps sack yards
in with runs,
yeah. Which is wrong, and so you have to adjust for sack yards. And I think the one year when you adjust for sack yards, Michigan was actually under four yards, which is probably the lowest ever seen.
So I'm just talking about raw yards per attempt that you'll see on ESPN. Five is horrible.
Which are wrong, yeah.
7 to 7.5 is about average. And then if you're at 10, which is where Devin was actually when he came in after the Nebraska game, and where Jason Campbell was his first year with Borges' first year with Auburn, that's pretty much the theoretical maximum.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
We need to get to a break. Dave in St. Clair Shores, Ron, you guys are up next. So hang on. We'll get to you when we return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the official voice. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass, the MGO Blog Roundtable. We thought this was going to be the last one, but we have a couple of more coming up this season before August, so looking forward to that. But Brian Cook in with us, as well as Craig Ross. Ed Fang is
He's out of town. He'll greatly appreciate that we'll do a few more of these because he missed last week and this week's being out of town.
I mean, we have some basketball to talk about. Maybe not.
Yeah, he owes me. Well, but you know, I got the Kentucky thing wrong.
No, he only said they weren't going to the Final Four.
Final Four, right? So they didn't win a chance. I did say they were.
I don't remember what he actually owes us, but he owes us something.
Well, he owes me for the.
Didn't
Michigan
he
State
say
thing.
We should? Didn't he say people should take Duke?
He said that people should take the field over Kentucky for the championship, which is
right
out
about.
To be, yeah,
that turned out to be right, but he said they wouldn't make the Final Four. And
I think
the thing that we wagered was he said Oklahoma was going to take out Michigan State,
because and they did. They beat them by 50. It's amazing how Michigan State lost, five games in the tournament this year? Nobody's ever done that before.
734-998-1050. Let's go to St. Clair Shores and talk to David. David, what's up?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Just had a quick comment and a question. I think that Michigan can win 8 to 10 games this year just by the simple fact I think the defense last year was number 7, I believe, in the country in run defense. I think they'll improve on that, especially pressing the wide receivers. It'll take the receivers more time to get open. Therefore, I think that the defensive front will be able to get to the quarterback more. I think that special teams under John Baxter is going to improve. And I see them being, when I went to the spring game, I see them being a team like the Minnesota Gophers last year, overachieving because of good defense, special teams play, being able to run the football effectively enough. Now, my question is, because I may have a viewpoint that's in the minority, I think Shane Morris is going to be the starter even over Jake Rudick. And the reason why I believe that is I think that he'll continue to improve. He actually improved in this spring game, and he's looked better than at any other point that he's played, including in real live action. But I think Shane's arm talent is it's too much to pass over, because I watch Jake Rudick a lot at Iowa, and he just don't have the talent Shane Morris does. He does have the experience that Shane doesn't, but I think if Harbaugh, the QB whisperer that he is, can improve on Shane eating the ball, throwing the ball away, committing less mistakes, I think Shane is the odds-on favorite to start in Utah.
Thanks a lot for the call there, David. I will say this. I think it is premature to write him off. I don't think that Shane Morris or Alex Malzone will be the same guy next fall that they were at the end of the spring.
No, definitely not. I think, you know, the 8 to 10 would be reasonable in a normal year, but this is a year where they have three real non-conference opponents. So they got Utah, they got Oregon State, they got BYU. Those are all games that they could lose, especially early when you might be having some shaky issues with your quarterback. And, you know, if you've got three tomato cans on that schedule, then I'm, like, looking at that and being like, you know, if they get to the right breaks in the Big Ten, that could happen. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a schedule where, you know, if you're a real good team, it's a good schedule. But if you're one of those kind of middling teams, you're looking at that and you're like, I wish we had another tomato can on there.
I will say this. If we go out to Utah and win, 10 wins would be something I'd say, yeah, that starts to feel viable. I mean, Utah beat us up in the front last year. They've got a good defensive front this year. They have weaknesses in the secondary. So that'll be at Utah, a very difficult game, I think, for, especially breaking in.
You know, Michigan keeps scheduling Utah like they seem like a good team that we can beat, and then it's like, no, you can't.
Let's go to the phones. 734-998-1050. Ron in Ann Arbor. Ron, what's up?
Hi, guys. You're talking right now about what I'm calling in about. Most people are predicting 8 to 10 wins. I don't see it based on the fact that the non-conference is going to be tough. I could see them easily losing to Utah and BYU. Oregon State will be tough. Maybe the only so-called patsy on that non-conference is UNLV, and there's no MAC schools for Michigan to beat this year. And the other thing that concerns me a lot is Michigan has forgotten how to win on the road. It hasn't done it in years, beat a quality team on the road. I see this team winning maybe 6-7 games, with all these difficulties. Now, if all of a sudden the lights went on and we see more talent out there than we've seen so far, it could be 8-10. But I think a lot of people are very optimistic. Like I say, this non-conference schedule is one of the toughest I've seen in years. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Yeah, I think that both those colors are, I mean, 8 is my baseline now, because I think you have
what's a baseline mean?
Just like, I think that's the most likely outcome, but I don't think that, I'm not very confident in that prediction, you know? Like, I don't feel like, oh, this is an 8-win team. I feel like, it's an 8-win team, maybe. So there's a lot of variation in what this could end up being. I will say that when Harbaugh took over a 1-11 Stanford team, he improved them by 3 games, despite not having anywhere near the raw materials he's going to have at Michigan. So I think it looks kind of goofy right now, but we've had a coaching transition, and the culture will take some time to take hold. And when it does, it'll be a good thing.
I hope that's right.
All right. It is 9:58 on a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider. So, yeah, we will have at least one more roundtable. So I'm looking forward to that. We can put a cap on it, maybe two more. We get through the month. We'll see. We'll be able to talk a little bit of basketball as Spike Albrecht getting his surgery here in the offseason. Jaylen Brown announced his final 8, and he expanded it.
Got feeling?
No.
Come on,
no, do it. Don't have that.
You can make, but you still, can but still create hold, the future.
Still holding out hope, but no gut feeling. But I got to tell you, man, there were people that were saying that Michigan was out. Michigan's not out. And I think there are some teams in that top 6 that are fluff. That top 8 that are fluff. Michigan is not one of the fluff teams. So we'll see. That'll do it for today's show. Coming up next is Tiki and Tierney, followed by the Jim Rome Show at noon. Another Tigers midday game. Love those. Ira Weintraub.
Weather permitting, but yes, Tigers and Twins. 1:08 start time, 12:40 coverage starts.
Followed by the huge show. 4:30, Frozen Four. At 5 o'clock, Nebraska, Omaha versus Providence. 8:30, Boston U versus North Dakota. Tomorrow, we'll talk to John U. Bacon. Get his thoughts on the spring game, as well as I know he had a chance to talk to Jim Hackett. So we'll talk to him about that tomorrow on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA Ann Arbor, a community.
Who's got it better than us?
No!